May the last one burn into flames. Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. If you're just joining us, I am so happy to have my friend, executive chef and owner of Amelinda Restaurant in downtown Milwaukee, Greg Leon, joining me. The lead in music was appropriate, I thought.
I like that.
Yeah, that's Beyonce.
Yeah,
kicking it off. But that last line, because winners don't quit on themselves. One thing that I've come to revere and really respect about chefs and people that start restaurants is the resilience and the perseverance that y'all have to have. It is such a tough business.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm here at the restaurant and I'm sitting, we have a chef's counter and a bar, and I'm sitting at C1, which is the first seat at the counter. And I can tell you how many times I call this my crying chair. So like, this is when I sit. And I haven't cried in a while, but like, especially during the pandemic and right after, like I would sit here and it's like, you know, again, you have to do it because you love it. You know, like today I'm sitting here talking to you and I'm just watching everything that's going on. And I'm thinking about all the stuff we have to do to get ready. And then when we open in an hour and a half, you have to have thick skin. You know, this week, we've been dealing with some not so favorable reviews. Mm. You know, up until the nominations came out, we were like, rock stars, 5 stars across the board, all platforms.
And oh, everybody's then, you know, a critic now?
And the nominations come out, and then you get these people who, I don't know what their expectations are because they don't communicate them to you. But I think they hear James Beard, so they assume Alinea, Tweezer, you know, that kind of stuff, which is not the case. You know, there's like, you know, I met a winner last year when I was at the awards. They won for Blake's Bakery. They make tortillas. So I think these people here, oh, they're nominated. I'm going to go in and I have these expectations. And so it's been kind of tough. I have a friend who I call for moral support whenever I read the reviews, and his wife was in the background yelling at me, stay off the internet, is all she just kept saying.
Yeah, for
and,
real.
You know, and it also only takes, you know, you can have 30, 40, like 5-star reviews. And it just takes that one.
The one hater.
That just like, oh my God, it's so crushing. So you have to have thick skin. You have to do it because you love it. You can't do it because you want to be rich. You can't do it because you want to be famous. You have to love food.
Yeah. I again, my respect, brother, because it is just hard work. Anytime you put art out there, whatever your version of art is, somebody's going to have some such to say about it. Right.
And I don't go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just, it takes a lot of bravery because you got to do it every day, right? Like, oh, that was a banging dish. Yep. That connected. And then go tomorrow and go make perfect, beautiful, transformational food again. Man, that is daily. It takes a commitment.
I've had people come in here, and you know, for the most part, I would say at least like 98% of the customers that we have are just amazing, very nice human beings. Like all of them. We have a really great base of like regular customers. And an example of how amazing they are is during the pandemic, a lot of them sent us their stimulus checks.
And said, oh my gosh.
Put this check towards the restaurant because we want to make sure you're open when this ends.
When we come back.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the caliber of the people that we have here. But I've had tables, I'll talk to one table and they'll be like, oh my God, this dish was amazing. It like changed my life. It was so good. And then literally we'll talk to the next table who had the exact same dish. This is garbage. What are you serving? And I just wish that people would understand, yes, they're coming to the restaurant and they're spending their hard-earned money with us. And we're very grateful for that. But just understand that a lot of people put a lot of time and their energy and their soul on this plate. So just try to be a little bit nicer. You know, I get it. Our food maybe not be for everybody. Maybe they don't get it. They don't like the flavors. But just be a little nicer about it.
Yeah. There's a way to communicate criticism, right?
Yeah. And communicate it. You know,
yes.
This past weekend, we were talking about reviews. We had this table came in. And my servers always ask the tables how their experience was, how their food was. And then our host, who also waters tables, also, same thing. Like, they're like robots. I go to as many tables as I can and ask how the experience was. And so these people came in and apparently they had the worst meal of their life. Like literally that was what they said in the review. And so I went on, I normally don't respond, but I responded and I said, you know, sorry, I'm bummed out about that. That's not what we want. We want everybody to live happy. But if it's that bad, why didn't you say something when you were here? Like, give us the chance to turn it around for you. Let me take it off your bill. Let me make you a new dish. Let me do a handstand, whatever it's going to take to make you happy. I want you to leave happy. So I will do whatever I can. But when you come in, you have such a horrible experience and then you don't say anything and then you walk out the door, I can't do anything about it.
That is, if there was
to me that you like to complain.
Yes. If there was one thing that I hear consistently from my chef friends or other owners and operators in the food and beverage industry is if you have a problem, let someone know because no one can fix that for you if you don't tell them.
You know, I've had a conversation with, like, sometimes I've called some of these tables and I'm like, why didn't you, like, I went and spoke to you. Why didn't you say something? Well, I don't like confrontation. Well, listen, I'm 5'6 and I weigh 130 pounds. I'm not very menacing and I'm pretty nice when I talk to the table. So I can't imagine anybody thinks that I'm going to start a fight in the middle of my restaurant on a Friday night. I don't know. I mean, that might happen in movies, but it doesn't happen in real life. So anybody who's listening out there, just be honest. Like if your servers are asking you, if the chef's asking you, it's because we want to know. So be honest if you had a crappy experience.
Most folks, I want to know, like, I want some loving feedback, even if I'm screwing it up. Like, tell me because I want to do better. If this is my chosen profession, this is the thing I love, then I can't get any better unless people are giving me feedback.
Absolutely.
And I think I also wanted to kind of lean into your point about, listen, sometimes the food and the idea might not just hit for you. That doesn't mean that the chef or the food or the concept was wrong. It might just be not your jam, and that's okay, right?
I mean, this is a very subjective business, and it's like what one person loves. You know, there's things that I put on my menu that I would never eat because I don't like them.
Yeah.
But people love them. So, you know, it's a matter of opinion.
Well, I won't ask you what those dishes are, my friend.
I don't think we have any on our menu right now.
Okay. Well, there you go. Where can people find Amelinda? Where can they make a reservation?
So Amelinda is located at 315 East Wisconsin Avenue. We're on Wisconsin Avenue between Broadway and Milwaukee. We're about like 4 blocks from the Art Museum, half a block from the Pfister. It's street parking, although there's a parking garage on the corner of Broadway and Wisconsin. You can find us on Instagram at Amelinda MKE. Same thing on Twitter or X. We're on Facebook. And to make a reservation, you can go to our website, which is amelinda.com, and then click on the reservation tab.
Or you
can go to talk.com and then just put in Amelinda.
Well, you know where to find it. I hope everybody who's listening gets an opportunity to eat your food because the thing, for me, I call it the Jesus Christ theory. And the Jesus Christ theory goes like this. It doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not. Like, Jesus Christ, pretty influential guy. They wrote a book about him. It's been passed down for centuries. Common theme. When really important stuff happens, we get together with our friends and family. We break bread and we drink together. This is the common cultural connectivity. It's the thread that binds every single human being on this planet. And if you don't have the money to travel to the Iberian Peninsula, in your dinner, in their experience at your restaurant, you can have that moment of cultural outreach. You can learn something through food. I'm assuming you've traveled around and experienced food in all kinds of different places. For folks listening, what is the best way when you're traveling to really connect with the local culture? I always like to find street vendors.
Eating, yeah.
Right. And what's your favorite eatery when you're traveling?
Well, it depends on where I'm going. Right now, I'm kind of hooked on Mexico City.
Mm.
I went last year by chance. A friend called me up. He's like, I found these cheap tickets to Mexico City. It's Sunday to Wednesday. Do you want to go? And I was like, sure. And I grew up in South America. So I'm like, I'm going to like it. You know, I like Mexican food. I fell in love with it. Oh. And so we ate at a fancy Michelin-starred restaurant. And I ate on the street. And it was all equally as good. Mm. Mexico City street food is the best. You know, he also was, you know, when we started traveling together, one of the things he said, he's like, I've never traveled with anybody whose vacations are centered around eating and food. He's like, I like traveling like this. So I just, you know, what I do is I'll like, I'll go in, I'll look at the neighborhood where I'm staying. I'll go on Google Maps and kind of see like what neighborhood restaurants are. I'll ask people, I'll go on social media, and then I'll just walk around.
Yeah.
Like I'll just walk around the neighborhood and see what's going on. But my opinion, Mexico City right now is the culinary capital of the Americas. And I'm probably going to get some hate for saying that, but the food coming out of Mexico City right now is just insanely good. And again, it's not only is it good, it's good across the board. Like, we went to a restaurant called Pujol, which is like, I cried halfway through this meal. It was so good. And then I left and ate a taco on the street. Some lady was out of a car, and it was like, was just equally incredible.
Isn't it? I mean, that's the moment, right? I can't believe people travel and don't have food and drink as the center of their trips, because that's all I've ever done.
Nothing makes me more mad than when I see my friends traveling. And I have some friends who just went to Spain recently for the first time. They went to Barcelona, and I'm on social media and I'm seeing their pictures, and they're eating at like Chipotle.
Oh my God.
McDonald's. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, well, you know, and I'm like, no, then why spend the money? Like, why go there?
Why get on an airplane, right? If you can eat at the joint that's down the block from your casa at home.
It drives me insane, Maggie.
The first time, the first thing I do after I know that I'm going somewhere and like buy the airplane tickets is I'm reading all the stuff, checking out the neighborhood spots and like trying to book reservations for the food where at the joints that I need the reservations for. It's my entire purpose of being there.
100%.
I love it. If you can hang for one more segment.
Totally. Oh, I'm here.
This is catnip to me, folks. And it's Friday. I'm going to be eating this weekend. I can't wait. This is Foodie Friday on the Maggie Dawn Show. I hope to be putting this out there as much as I can each week, because, you know, we talk about Wisconsin cuisine and it seems it's all the dairy and all the stuff, but there's just so many incredible things happening, not just in Milwaukee, not just in Madison, but statewide with our cuisine and the great farmers we've got, the great local products. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. I'm joined by Amelita's executive chef and owner, James Beard, National Best Chef nominee, Greg Leone, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm so happy to have you here, man. You're uplifting my spirit.
Thank you for inviting me.
Heck yeah. We'll have to do this again. Couple of quick messages, everybody. We'll be right back after them. We're going to talk a little bit more with my friend Greg here on the Maggie Dawn Show. What feels good in my soul is a little dinner at Amelinda, my friend Greg Leone, joining the Maggie Dawn Show for the first installation of Foodie Fridays. Talking about food always makes me hungry. I can talk about food a lot. It's always good stuff. But one of the hallmarks of the great food I've been eating in and around Milwaukee is that chefs and owners like yourself are sourcing from some of our local producers. Explain to folks what farm to table means, because people hear it all the time. And then if you want, lift up and shout out some of the great local producers that help make Amelinda's food so fabulous.
Sure. Now you're putting me on the spot. But so I farm to table, which is, you know, it's one of those terms that like when it really people started using it, it really like had a lot of meaning behind it. Now, like everybody says they're farm to table. But basically you try to use as much local ingredients from local farmers as possible. It's a little difficult in Wisconsin because we have about 18 months of winter. So, you know, during those months of winter, all you can get is like potatoes and onions and stuff that they have in their roots cellar.
Yep.
But spring, summer and fall, it is a bounty of goodness. You know, we've been working with, God, and I'm drawing a blank now.
Sorry.
Amy's Acres. We've been working with Amy's Acres for almost 10 years now. So Melinda started off as a pop-up restaurant before we were here. So we would take over the National Cafe on 9th and National. And we did that from December of 2013 to January of 2015. And she was one of the first farmers we worked with. I love her to death. She's amazing. Her produce is just the most beautiful stuff. I get in trouble because she'll send me the list and I just go crazy ordering all this stuff. And then she shows up on Wednesday with like 10 boxes. We don't have a lot of refrigerated space here. So I'm like, oh, what am I going to put this? And I've ordered too much stuff. What am I going to do with this? But I can't imagine not cooking this way.
Yeah.
And I know in some parts of the country, some parts of the world, it's not sustainable and you can't and you don't have the access to it. But it's how our grandparents, it's how my grandparents used to cook. And actually, I have to say, it's how my parents used to cook, too. I grew up in Venezuela. And so we used to get a lot of super fresh produce and vegetables. So there was just no doubt that that's what we're going to do. Wisconsin has some amazing farmers.
Yeah, they sure do.
Amazing farmers. We also work with Happy Farm, which is also great. We love them. Their honey is incredible. And, you know, you were talking about Milwaukee and the food scene on the whole state. You know, I came here from San Francisco and I came to visit and I was just blown away. And I'm like, okay, this is a place where I could live and open a restaurant by the talent. I haven't spent a lot of time in Madison. I'm sure Madison has some incredibly talented people too. I'm just not aware of them. And I can only talk about Milwaukee because it's where I live. But Milwaukee is just, you know, it's incredible. The amount of talented, passionate people who cook in the city. You know, you've got Good Kind, you've got Birch, you've got Odd Duck, Wolf on Broadway. I mean, that's just to name a few. And the other thing and I want to touch on is not only is everybody super talented, but we're all friends and we all help each other. And there's a real sense of community, which isn't something I experienced in other cities I've been cooking at. And I think that's why we did so well during the pandemic.
Yes.
With not having a lot of restaurants closing down because we all were keeping an eye out for each other.
Yeah. I'm working on getting Chef Kyle from Birch, who was himself nominated last year for a National Best Chef James Beard Award. I grew up in Milwaukee. I left for a long time, over a decade, lived in New York, lived abroad, did a whole bunch of things, came back here and I was like, this is amazing. The food scene just blew up. And I love you talking about looking at Amy's Acres produce list. And you're like, yes, this. Because brother, my favorite place is like the farmer's market, a really good grocery store. I come home and that fridge is like packed. It's like a Tetris operation to get all the good stuff in there. Makes me so happy.
If you haven't been to the Fondy Farmer's Market, that's like one of my favorite ones. And the West Dallas one is incredible too. But the Fondy one, the people who run it are amazing and their mission is fantastic. And we do a fundraiser for them every summer. And it's just a great program. They do a lot for the neighborhood.
Yeah, they
sure
do.
So check it out this summer.
Yes, the Fondy Farmer's Market, if you don't know it, is in one of those so-called previously food desert sort of communities, and it brings that fresh produce in. It is a hip and happening fun place to get your produce on the weekends. Yeah, it's funny. When I go do group vacations, all those kinds of things, like I'm always in charge of where are we going to get the food from and packing the fridge. And like, I am not ready to have a good time until that fridge is packed to the gills. I call it the Wisco fridge. Like Wisconsinites, we need that full refrigerator. You got to have all the good stuff in there before the good times can roll.
We're talking about traveling and vacations, about eating. When I went to Spain last, I went with a group of friends from here. We've been friends for a while. We hang out all the time. And so we went out to eat. And at the second meal, and there was like 10 of us. And the second meal, I look up and they're all kind of looking at me. And I'm like, what are people looking at? And they're like, we've never seen you eat like this. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, when you're at the restaurant, you don't eat. And then when you come over to the house, you don't really eat a lot, but like you are packing it in. And I'm like, well, I bring my vacation stomach with me and I'm trying to eat as much food here as I can. Cause that's also how we get ideas and we get inspired. So I call it my eating research.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Sitting down and eating new and different food. And again, connecting with culture in that way, like learning about people. That's how family shares. That's how cultures bridge, right? This is how we learn.
You're talking about food bridging cultures. You've probably heard about it, but we have this program called Tables Across Borders, which is a perfect example of food being a bridge across cultures. I said, we invite refugees who are newly relocated to Milwaukee. We sell tickets for dinner. They cook the food from their country. They do the cooking, all the cooking. And then 100% of the ticket sales goes to them. And recently there's been some articles about it. People have asked us, what's one of your favorite things about it? Just one. And, you know, the one that I keep going back to is like being able to see what these people do with these ingredients, where are ingredients that we use too, but to see how they use it in a different way, yeah, and to see them connect with their Milwaukee community, yeah, is just an amazing, it's an amazing thing. And so we have three of those dinners coming up, and you can get info on those on our website.
That is amelinda.com. You've been hearing from Chef Gregory Leone, executive chef, owner and operator of Amelinda, right in downtown Milwaukee on Wisconsin Avenue, nominated this year for best chef on the national level from James Beard. Greg, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're giving me all the positivity rolling into the weekend, my friend. I hope we can do this again. Tell all your chef friends they need to come on the Maggie Dawn Show.
I will definitely let them know. And then I hope to see you guys in here soon.
Heck yeah. I'm 6 foot and I wear heels all the time. So we'll take a very cute picture together, my friend.
Perfect. And when you want to come in, you just text me directly. You got my number and we'll make sure you're all set up and have a table.
I love it. Mwah, my friend.
Thank you, my dear. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Listen, we're going to take some quick important messages at the bottom of the hour. We're going to come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show with Terry Barr. What is local and overlooked across the state of Wisconsin here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network? If you want to join us for our last half hour, 855-75-CIVIC. Keep it locked, everybody. The fun continues after these important messages. It's a crystal. Don't need your silicone. I prefer my own. What God gave me is just fine.
Cruising down the boardwalk, lover on my left side, waves are crashing into shore, it's a high tide. Margarita in my right hand, the grass is green on my side.
I hope you have a margarita in your hand. I plan on having one shortly. We're rolling into the last half hour of the Maggie Dawn Show on Friday. And I know I am super excited to have my next guest back on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'd started a little segment back when I was in the 6 o'clock time slot called Local and Overlooked so that we would have a chance to talk about some of the things that most of us probably have missed from the news bits of the week across the state. Civic Media's very own Terry Barr is back on the Maggie Dawn Show. She is going to be regular here on Fridays, helping us know what is local and overlooked. Welcome, Terry. So glad to have you back.
Oh, Maggie Dawn, congratulations to you. I'm so excited to be back with you and especially thrilled for you to have this time slot to do even more of what you're so good at.
Oh, that's so kind, Terry. I really appreciate it. It's a thrill for me. If you would have asked me 5 years ago if I thought I would be doing this, I would have been like, you're nuts. But here we are. So glad to have you back. I always get a lot of feedback. Just before you came on, a texter was hitting us up on the text line. So excited to be hearing from you again. So my thanks to you for being able to do this. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yay! I have two local but overlooked tidbits for you today. And if this is indeed overlooked, it's not going to be for long. The Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin is issuing a warning to residents. If you are going to donate right now, be sure you know exactly where your hard-earned money is going. Now, Lisa Schiller works with the BBB and says they are getting dozens of complaints right now from all across the state, very aggressive people on the phone trying to get money. And when they look into it, it's ending up, some of these are a political action committee, so it's a robocall, or Yeah. Or it's a scam and they're using names like they're with the police, they're with the fire, they're with veterans. And I hate to say, just hearing those words and thinking you can help those kinds of organizations, people will give without realizing what they're giving to. So Lisa's biggest thing is be aware, do your homework. Look up whatever this group says they are and don't feel like, hey, I got to get your money right now. Don't fall for that. If you can give a donation to someone, we all should know this, you will be able to give a donation anytime that's good for you, not that it's good for them. So if you want some more information, bbb.org. And Maggie, this one hits me. Consumer things like this just drive me bananas. So I wrote a story about it with a couple of more tips, and you can find it on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
So important, Terry. And it's sad to me to hear that this is spiking again. There, if you haven't seen it, if our listeners haven't seen it, there's an HBO docuseries out there. It's called Telemarketers. And it tells, it tells the story of basically these fraud schemes where, and some of them are legitimately hired by police affiliated or firefighter or veteran affiliated fundraising groups. But what the fundraising groups do is they hire these companies. The company basically will say, we'll cut you a check for $500,000. And in exchange, you'll call us a consultant and we can use the name of your organization to go fundraise. But the actual percentage of every dollar going to the organization is either like 1%, 2%, 5%. It's tiny. And then the fundraisers take all the rest of it. They will oftentimes pose as police officers. They will pose as firefighters, as veterans. They'll hire people who, quote unquote, sound like these folks. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Telemarketers. Check out Terry's article on civicmedia.us. And I'll just say this one little tip for folks. If you've got somebody on the horn that's called you and is asking you to donate money, ask them, how much of this goes to the organization? What is the percentage number? If they lie about it, it's a crime. What is the percentage that goes to the organization? Are you a member of this organization or are you hired by the organization? If they lie about it, it's a crime. So glad that you're bringing attention to this. Thank you, Terry.
Well, we know it's a heavy election year, and if this is starting already, and the BBB of Wisconsin is saying, you know, when they look into this and it's either a scam or political action committee, that's why they're stressing, really, really ask questions, and don't feel like you have to give if you're not ready to donate. So thanks, Maggie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible.
Here's the other ones.
Go ahead, Terry. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. This one, oh, wow. The last surviving child of legendary conservationist Aldo Leopold has died. Professor Estella Leopold was the youngest of Aldo Leopold's five children. She grew up in Madison. She went to college in Madison and taught in Wisconsin for a really long time. I feel lucky, Maggie. I got to interview her a couple of years ago, and she was living in Seattle at the time. She still considered the Badger State home. Her dad, of course, was a soil advocate, conservationist. He started in that in 1915, when few people called soil.
Right.
He followed in his footsteps, founding the Aldo Leopold Foundation in the Baraboo area. And she would come back. They had a shack on the land, and she would come back several times a year after she moved away to be with the land that had been her dad's. Estella Leopold was 97 years old. And what a wonderful woman who still loved Wisconsin.
Wow, that's incredible. It's being from the state of Wisconsin has always been a source of pride for me. And Wisconsin's relationship and the fact that so many incredible conservationists and naturalists think of and called Wisconsin home Alda Leopold, his daughter, as well as, of course, John Muir, right? Like, this is so ingrained from the northern tip of the Apostle Islands, right, to the southernmost portion of our state in Racine and Kenosha, west over to La Crosse, east into the Door County Peninsula. Everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, no matter what county you're in, there is a beautiful state park. There is a way to communicate with nature. One of the things that always sits a little bit in my belly as a place of anxiety is that these parks, whether we're talking about national parks or state parks or local county parks,
right,
they require a lot of money to keep them as vibrant and accessible as they are. And so much of what we hear now seems to vilify expenditures that are aimed to preserve parks and preserve the environment so that every single one of us, no matter where we live, no matter what our zip code, can go and reap the benefits of being in nature.
Yeah. Remember 2020 when all the parks were open and people were actually out taking walks because that's about the only thing we could do? And it became such a source of freedom for everybody. And I think people that had never explored a single park in the state realized how gorgeous the parks are. And I think that is considered something that has stayed, that many people have kept that love. But yeah, if it's not supported, what will happen? I hate to even think about that, Maggie.
Absolutely. It's important for each of us. And again, you know, when we talk about equity and making sure that government is working for everybody, that's a huge part of it.
Yes.
It's the preservation of public parks so that folks know, if you live in the densest part of an urban area or if you're in a rural section of Wisconsin working on a farm, wherever you may be, you work a line at a manufacturing plant, that we all have the opportunity and, frankly, the right. You know, a lot of these lands are public lands held in trust. We have a right to be able to enjoy that, and the mental health benefits of even 5 minutes of chilling out outside, you immediately, the endorphins release, you're feeling better. What's your favorite park? Do you have a favorite one, Terry?
I don't have a favorite because I like so many of them, but I am from Shawano County originally, and
Shawano County.
Pardon?
I said Shawano County.
Exactly.
That's one of those Wisconsin pronunciations that only if you're from here, you know how to say it.
It's so true. And the park there is Hayman Falls County Park. Trails all over for both biking and hiking and, of course, snowshoeing in the winter. And that's one of my favorites because it's one of those, it's pretty densely forested, too. So it's so quiet and peaceful.
Oh,
how about you? What's your favorite?
So I have the most amazing memories from when I was a child. We would go to this place up in Iron River, Wisconsin. It's the Birch Grove Campground.
Oh, wow.
Yep, it's the Birch Grove Campground. We would wake up at the crack of dawn, almost sometimes when it was dark out, because it's a multi-hour, it's like 8+ hours from Milwaukee to get up to Iron River, Wisconsin. We'd pack that car down.
Yeah.
Things were lashed, you know, to the roof rack. And off we would set.
Was it a station wagon?
No, it was an old, huge Buick with the doors that weighed about like 40 pounds, right? No AC, windows down, right? We'd get up there.
Yeah.
My mom would have made the foil packets, right? So when you set up camp, right, you need the first order of business, firewood. Get those tents going, right? Get your shelter set up. And mom would make the foil packets, which my favorite foil packet, tater tots, kielbasa, or ring bologna, because I'm from Wisconsin, right? Right. And like frozen green beans, you put it in there with some like Lowry's, right? And as we get the fire going.
Oh, Lowry's all over everything.
All over everything. We'd throw the foil packets in the fire and immediately commence trying to get camp set up. And by the time all that was done, right, it would be dark outside. We'd have our little camp chairs, or usually I was sitting on a log.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And we'd crack open those foil packets. You'd be so hungry and all the steam would come out. And you'd, so I'd go to bed that first night smelling like ring bologna, campfire, and like sunscreen and off, right? That like, that swarthy mixture of those campground smells, that is my childhood memory that I will have forever. Birch Grove is one of those campsites, Terry, that is small and intimate, and each campsite is,
I love it,
surrounded by all kinds of trees so that you can't really see your neighbors, but you know that they're there. You can see the fire flickering through the trees. Like, man, to me, that is what Wisconsin is all about. My thanks to you.
Yeah.
My,
and is it?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And if you smell those smells again, it takes you right back there, doesn't it?
Little ring bologna and campfire. Yeah. I'm right back in Birch Grove. My thanks to you, Terry Barr, for another great.
Thank you, Maggie.
Great installment of Local and Overlooked. We'll have her back next week for more of the same. Thanks, Terry. Have a great weekend. Listen. Again, ring bologna and campfire. It just doesn't get any more Wisconsin than that, everybody. I'm going to have some closing thoughts on the week when we come back after these very short break, couple of important messages. If you want to rejoin our conversation, I'm going to close up our discussion about, you know, the Heritage Foundation and the Armageddon that they promised for our democracy. And I also need to let you know about a decision that the Seventh Circuit just dropped this week. It's a bit of the Seventh Circuit's own shadow docket. Very strange thing that they did. No precedent. You're not going to want to miss it because we all got to stay informed about this stuff. You always get it here on the Maggie Dawn Show. 855-75-CIVIC. Get your last thoughts in before we head into this weekend. Back with more in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. It's been quite a week for me, beginning a new phase of my career. And I just want to say to everybody out there listening, every day I'm going to try to do my very best to engage with you, to share my emotions about things with you, to give you a place to share with me so that we can learn together. It is an incredibly it's so heartfelt, and I feel so privileged to have this opportunity. So my thanks to all of you. It's been quite a week. I've gotten through it. I'm looking forward to next week. We got a stacked lineup of guests next week as well. And it ain't lost on me that today, March 1st, marking the end of my first week as a official talk show radio host, is the first day of Women's History Month. And I certainly wouldn't be here without a whole lot of love and support from a lot of people, both at Civic Media and folks that I've worked with at the county, at the city, back when I was a federal court clerk for Judge Michael Caney on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. It's taken a whole lot of people to help me get here, and especially my parents. I want to say thanks to them. I couldn't have done it without y'all, and I certainly can't do it without you, the callers and listeners. My thanks to you. We began today's show by talking about the Heritage Foundation's 887-page book about how they're going to basically dismantle democracy and create a dictatorship. It's scary beyond measure. And one of my most faithful listeners of the entire network's lineup, Mark from Prairie du Sac, I always want to give Mark a shot at making his thoughts known on the commentary of the day. So, Mark, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, thanks so much, Maggie. And first off, I'd like to, all our principled conservative callers to actually listen to what you're saying now and actually that think about what some of the stuff they're saying. Because if they vote, you know, with the Trump they're voting for the end of democracy. I mean, pure and simple on that. And that what gets me is the complete, you know, betrayal of our Constitution that these guys are actually proposing. I mean, that, you know, that our founders actually were pretty wise when they laid out, in spite of their many flaws, that they're pretty wise in laying out a secular democracy. That, and you can see that in, you know, from what Jefferson, who was considered by many to be an atheist, and he wasn't an atheist, he was a deist. James Madison, who was not, you know, was a devoutly religious man, but actually put in there because he knew the dangers of theocracies and of the rise up of oligarchs and how quickly they could, tear a republic apart. I mean, republics had fallen in the past. I mean, you know, one of the ones that they were warning about was Rome. I mean, if you read the Federalist Papers, you don't see any references to the Bible. You see references to the ancients, I mean, and to other experiments and democracies that had taken place in Europe throughout. But, I mean, when Rome collapsed as a republic and they established a dictatorship, the bloody mess that was, you know, the persecution of people who did not agree with, you know, the status quo.
Yeah, that's Mark, we got a couple of callers coming in now, too. Those that do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. We need to be able to engage with history and all of its complexities. Bill from Oconomowoc, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Oh, I caught it. You just said it a minute ago that I missed your part, beginning of your show. When you touched on the word Heritage Foundation, listeners, listen up to this lady. You've got to understand where that Heritage Foundation is going, who built it, what they're about. You really need to make people aware of that, because if they don't be deceived by the name Heritage. Please. It's just the exact opposite. That's a wolf in sheep clothing. And Maggie, thanks for bringing that up. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much, Bill. Thanks for your call. If you do want to catch the beginning of my show where I go through in quite detail what this, quote, mandate for leadership, the conservative promise, which I cheekily say the conservative promise for the downfall of American democracy. You can find that at civicmedia.us. You can check out the beginning of my show. I do want to give hat tip to Carlos Lozada, an opinion columnist with the New York Times, who just put a piece out on February 29th, just yesterday, about the Heritage Foundation's mandate to try to destroy American democracy, to remove all checks and balances, to create a theocratic dictatorship with one guy in charge of everything, to require pledges of loyalty, in effect, from federal workers, to destroy labor regulations, to gut environmental regulations, to throw us back into the American Dark Ages, to treat women as second-class citizens, and to bring on the new Jim Crow, and to make public education fully religious, to make the books we read subject to review by the Christian nationalist far right. Yep, they wrote it down, folks. Kevin from Eau Claire, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, something I just read in the news, you're talking about the Heritage Foundation here. It sounds like they have a war on democracy. The Republicans also got a war on women, and now Tommy Tuberville just said that evidently they have a war against Christians, namely Catholics, because he said we got to plug up the border because all these people are coming across don't know anything about God. So I guess most of them, as I've heard, are Catholic, so now they don't want Catholics here.
I hear you, Kevin. Listen, Catholicism has been, throughout history at times, both an oppressor and the oppressed. And the current teachings coming out of this Pope, Pope Francis, have nothing to do, they cannot be squared with the conservative nationalist movement. I gotta go, folks. I could talk with y'all for hours. It has certainly been my pleasure. Thank you for listening this week. I didn't get to the Seventh Circuit. It will be first on the docket come Monday. You never want to miss a minute of the Maggie Dawn Show because you never know what's happening next. We drop knowledge bombs, but we talk about food and some fun stuff too. Thank you to everybody. Remember, it's always better when we do it together. And that's what we do here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Have a great, happy, and safe weekend, everybody. I'll be back on Monday.
Keep on running, 'cause the winner don't quit on themselves.